Welcome to Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast with Elizabeth Crawford, where I dish with trendsetters, tastemakers, and industry experts about everything from emerging trends to regulatory pressures to marketing strategies. Sustainability may not be as highly prioritized as taste or price in purchase decisions for food and beverage, but research suggests that it's increasingly important to consumers, especially younger shoppers who are coming into their buying power. The challenge for brands, according to Lori DeMeritt, CEO of research and consulting firm The Hartman Group, is effectively communicating how their products are better for the planet or farmers, which are complex concepts that don't always fit neatly onto a package. At the Winter Fancy Food Show, DeMeritt explained packaging and whether it's recyclable or compostable or made with reduced or no plastic is a primary way that consumers evaluate a product's sustainability. Next, she said, they look at the ingredients and whether they are grown sustainably, which many consumers perceive as also being healthier for them. Finally, she says, consumers are thinking about workers and whether they are paid and treated fairly. In this episode of Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast, brands at the Winter Fancy Food Show share how they approach sustainability and how they explain it to consumers. The CEO of Snacktivist shares how she talks about the complex issue of regenerative agriculture, a buzzy term that is often bandied about by the industry, but which hasn't quite broken through to the consumer in the same way as, say, organic. We also talk with the owner of Nutriberry, which is upcycling berry seeds to create products that are better for people and the planet. Seal of the Season, which also focuses on local distribution to reduce emissions, and Copper Moon Coffee about how it uplifts and creates new opportunities for farmers. Others showcased how they are using new technology to reduce their footprint on the farm or increase biodiversity. Founded in 2015 to help foster a more regenerative food system by creating consumer demand for more biodiverse crops, Snacktivist uses nutrient-dense, environmentally friendly crops that may be unfamiliar to create products that consumers already know and love. CEO Joni Kindwell-Moore quickly realized how important and difficult explaining regenerative agriculture is to consumers, and so she simultaneously founded a second company that leverages blockchain and QR codes to better educate shoppers and further drive demand for regeneratively farmed products.
So Snacktivist is a food innovation company, and our goal is to elevate crops that have an important role to play in regenerative food systems, but don't end up on our modern plates very often. So we take crops like sorghum, millet, teff, and different legumes, and we put them into products that people find to be familiar, like pancake mix and chips. I mean, because we have like pizza crust, we have a whole line, and people love it because it's just delicious food, and they don't realize that they're getting so much diversity when they eat it. When we founded Snacktivist back in 2015, and we were dedicated to elevating these crops that no one had ever heard of, we immediately realized there was such a fundamental challenge in storytelling, authentic storytelling in supply chains, and that we needed to rehumanize the story of supply chains and how business activities are done. And so at that time, I founded a second company that would take blockchain and QR codes and build an interconnected digital world that could tell the deep stories of your supply chain and their impact on health and the planet. And so that would include talking about nutrient density. That would include about like transparent reporting about allergens, heavy metals, pesticide residues, herbicide residues. But also, very importantly, capture all that field-level data that our farmers do and turn it into a story or into reportable, impactful data that could be given to banks, insurers, carbon credits, etc. So that company is now called Vision, and we just went live, all three women founders, and we are actually doing that. So the storytelling piece is something I am so passionate about because I just know so many people that are doing incredible work in the regenerative world, and their story never gets out. It doesn't get beyond the package. So as an activist, that we literally have built our whole company around that storytelling piece. We call it Regenerative by Design. All the things that we do, from ingredients to branded products, is all around like figuring out how we can make the story of regeneration come to life and taste delicious. So consumers at the store, at the grocery store, are in a unique position where most of them carry a phone. And so we actually just rolled out our front-to-pack QR codes because we don't even want them to have to pick up the bag. Like, if they want to just scan it from the shelf, they can. And now they're invited into a world where they can understand that our product is differentiated from our neighbors. Like, we're doing something different. They can see the pictures of the farmers that we work with. They can see the pictures of the farmers that we're building relationships with right now. And they can, it helps them to rehumanize that connection and understand that there are people involved every step of the way, and their purchase is making a big difference.
Snacktivist also relies on more common storytelling tools, including certifications. But unlike many brands, Kindwell More displays multiple certifications for regenerative agriculture rather than just picking one, because she doesn't want to limit the movement.
Right now, where regenerative is at as an industry is, I call it like tribalism gone wrong right now, where it's like everyone's kind of got their camp that they're in, and their camp is better than the other camp, which to me I find to be very damaging to the entire movement around regenerative agriculture. Because regenerative by nature will never be prescriptive. It can't be just an algorithm that you follow like a cookie cutter. Because one of the fundamental hallmarks of being regenerative is working with nature in the context of your farm. And that's going to be different no matter where you are in the world and what you're growing. And so I tend to kind of push back on regenerative certifications as being a hero play, like one cert takes all. Because I think that that will actually limit the innovation potential of regenerative agriculture at the ground level, and it doesn't address the needs of the market. All the regenerative ag verification plays right now are totally focused on management practices and certain outcomes at the soil level, and it doesn't really take into account the rest of the value chain. And that's really important because we need regenerative supply chains, not just regenerative farms, because regenerative farms on their own are not going to, they're not going to move the market. So I have a really different way of looking at it. I'm agnostic. I know all the regenerative verification partners out there. They're wonderful people. Their heart's in the right place. They're doing great work. But with our ingredients line, we're agnostic to them. We have farmers that participate in all of them. We want to, if like a private label buyer or say an institutional like food service partner approaches us and says, hey, we want help. We want a regenerative supply chain for X. We can say, hey, here's the pros and cons of the existing certs. And if you don't want to go with a cert, we've got tons of farmers that are very much regenerative, and we have proof that they are, but they don't prescribe to the verification model. So we let the consumer drive that narrative. You know, it's helpful. We've trained the consumer world to really rely on verifications because it simplifies the process of purchasing. You're like, cool, I see the badge, I'm going to buy. But I think in this particular case, there's a little danger with being too restrictive about it because there's still a lot of questions about what regenerative really means. And if we limit it too fast, I think it could shut out a lot of really amazing regenerative farmers and participants. And not because they're not amazing and truly doing good work, it's because they just don't agree with how the game is played. And I worry about that. I really do.
While Snacktivist started as a consumer-facing brand using regenerative crops, the company is expanding to become more of an ingredient supplier to help other brands meet the growing demand for regeneratively farmed food. Upcycling food, or turning would-be wasted byproducts into something delicious and nutritious for people, is one of the fastest growing trends in the food and beverage market and projected to grow at a compound annual growth rate of 4.6% from $52 billion in 2022 to $83.26 billion by 2023. At the Winter Fancy Food Show, several brands proudly display their upcycled certified and shared how their products were helping to reduce food waste and the estimated 4.4 billion tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year that food waste produces. Among these was Washington State-based Nutriberry, which owner David Wishnick explains creates better-for-you products from berry seed byproducts.
So 95% of the raspberries grown in the U.S. are grown in the state of Washington. And many of the producers of seedless puree are family farms. They're not small in the sense that they're family farmers, but they're not small in that they're three generations. They supply Coca-Cola and Dannon, and they produce seedless puree. a lot of them. There's a co-op too, and the seeds, they throw away. But seeds have the sort of value that they need for a plant to begin germinating, right? They have a fatty acid fraction and a water-soluble fiber fraction. So what we do is we press the seed for oil, and that oil has a sun protective factor in 20 out of 50 for raspberries. But fruit seed oils sell well, but it's only 10% of the weight of the seed. That means 90% is thrown away. Said another way, 1,000 pounds of raspberry seed oil requires us to dry 10,000 pounds of seed and then create 9,000 pounds of defatted fiber that has the water-soluble nutrients. That water-soluble fiber fraction has 2 to 3% polyphenols. And that's the fraction that we micronize to 5 microns, the size of a human cell, because those polyphenols are prebiotic, and they're encapsulated in a fiber, you know, because when you make it that fine, the polyphenols are encapsulated in fiber, and we want a USDA SBIR grant to study it with the Washington State School of Medicine on how it activates the microbiome. So that's what we're doing. We're using technology to micronize the defatted fraction, 90% of the weight of the dried seed. The raspberry seed oil actually has a sun protective factor between 29 and 50. It drives the market. It changes the way it's sold, and the upcycling part also does. Upcycle, believe it or not, upcycle has been the biggest driver. Upcycling is what opens the doors. When you look at a competitive landscape, large companies, upcycling part is actually the most important. No doubt about it.
The idea of eating locally to limit emissions and environmental impact isn't new, but it is more often used by restaurants that cater to their immediate communities rather than packaged foods, which are more traditionally produced for broad distribution. Frozen fruit manufacturer Seal of the Seasons, however, set itself apart as a national CPG player that takes a local approach to production and distribution in order to keep the planet as a priority at every step of its business. Company founder and CEO Patrick Mateer explains how this strategy not only is better for consumers, producers, and the planet, but also is helping him secure funding and shelf space.
We believe that locally grown food is better, and so we partner with family farmers right now across 17 different states, pretty much most of the country. We source the food locally, freeze it locally, and then package it locally, and only distribute it locally. Or regionally, depending on how you define it. But within 400 miles, as the USDA says. So it's about, I'd say, three things. Number one is flavor. We get so much feedback from our consumers that, you know, when they open the bag of our fruit, they get like hit by the smell of the product. Number two is carbon footprint. Really big for me. Like, I want to be minimizing that as much as possible. And we've calculated that for every 2-pound bag, we're offsetting about 1.06 pounds of greenhouse gases. Just comparing it to like transported product from Peru or Colombia, or, you know, doing everything locally. And then three is to support the farmers and jobs in our community. You know, since 2000, we've seen about 21% of smaller farmers disappear in the U.S. And so Seal of the Seasons, you know, we're part of the solution. More locally grown food, more opportunities for our growers, it means we'll see more farms stay afloat. So some retailers, for the first time this year, during the review process, they've asked us, you know, obviously new item forms, promotional plan. We've had retailers ask us for a carbon footprint analysis, a carbon life cycle analysis of our products. I think they're trying to better understand the carbon impact every product has, and, you know, help make their assortment decisions, you know, based on some of that stuff. Some big news with us recently, we just got a local producer loan program from Whole Foods. It's going to allow us to add some new locally grown items this year. It's going to allow us to launch a blue spirulina smoothie. It's coming out in June. Same format as this, just a new flavor. And we're also upgrading as many of our non-GMO local items to local certified organic items.
When family-owned Copper Moon Coffee rebranded in January 2020 after more than 10 years of operating, it did so in part to better highlight its sustainability program and its foundational value to source premium, sustainable-grown Arabica beans from farmers across 5 continents. Company VP of Sales and Marketing Nick Thompson explained the company did this in part because it sees it as the right thing to do and as table stakes, but also because research from the National Coffee Association found that sustainability is a top priority for coffee consumers.
National Coffee Association comes out with data twice a year. And when you look at like the top five reasons why people buy coffee, number one is what roast level is it? Light, medium, dark. Number two, ground, whole bean, what's the format? Three, four, five is it, do they treat the workers well? Is it sustainable? Is it fair trade? It's all the things that are making sure that that coffee is being sourced and grown sustainably. So we wanted to make sure, you know, we educated our customer about what we're going to do, what we're doing from a sustainable standpoint. We're a family-owned company. We've been in business for 14 years, and you know, one of the things that we really focus on is just roasting high-grade coffee, sourcing from countries all over the world. Part of our sourcing plan involves a program that we started called Copper Moon, Sea Copper Moon Rising, where C is an acronym for social, economic, and environmental. And so from a social standpoint, when we go to buy our coffee, we really kind of work with Rwandan Women's Co-op to support that farm and that community. And the other ways we kind of fill the bucket for empowering women coffee farmers is being a partner with the International Women's Coffee Alliance, which they provide education, health, all the things that you know, some of the women in coffee business are seeking at origin in Brazil and Colombia, you know, where all the coffees are coming from. And so that's just an example of one of the things that we do to kind of fill the bucket. And then from an environmental side and economic side, obviously making sure we source from, you know, good stewards of the environment, fair trade, organic. You know, once we kind of source, all of our roasting is done in Indiana. And, you know, we obviously we try to kind of share the stories on social, do some blogging. Our kind of high-level program is printed on all of our packaging, right? So when a consumer is looking, they'll see what we're doing from a sustainable standpoint. The National Coffee Association ranks if your coffee is sustainable as a really high indicator for purchase intent.
Other exhibitors at the show called out how they're working with growers to more sustainably produce, harvest, and grow products, such as by using solar panels or low-drip irrigation or drought-resistant crops. Many more highlighted organic and regenerative farming tactics like crop rotation and increased biodiversity, or called out if their packaging was compostable or recyclable. While each of these call-outs can represent complicated concepts, the prominence with which they were displayed suggests consumers care, and even if they don't fully understand sustainability claims yet, they can sway consumers to buy one product over another or try something new. With that, we've come to the end of another episode of Food Navigator USA's Soup to Nuts podcast. I hope that you'll join me again for another installment, and to help you remember, I encourage you to subscribe. Until next time, this is Elizabeth Crawford wishing you a productive, profitable, and safe week.